Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Mr. Foreman, on docket number 2282CR117001, murder in the second degree, what say you? Is the defendant at the bar guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Do all of you agree?
Yes.
Thank you. 002, what say you? Is the defendant at the bar not guilty or guilty?
Not guilty.
003, what say you? Is the defendant at the bar leaving the scene after accident resulting in death, the defendant not guilty or guilty?
Not guilty.
So say you, Mr. Foreman?
Yes.
So say you all?
Welcome to the In-Between Podcast. I'm your host, Mel Barrett, and I'm going to cut right to the chase. Karen Reed, after three long years and two trials, has been found not guilty on all three major charges, though she was convicted of a misdemeanor operating under the influence charge and was sentenced to probation and an alcohol awareness program. You can breathe now. What I want to start talking about first in this episode is John O'Keefe. By all accounts, John was a good, big-hearted dude. He had his darkness, just like the rest of us, but it sounds to me that if he needed a helping hand, John would be the first in line. I'm terribly sorry that his family did not find the answers they were looking for, and I can't imagine how heartbroken and angry they must feel right now. I won't go into the psychology of John and Karen's relationship. It's not for me to say. But I think we can all determine, based on the texts and voicemails, that it was volatile and that the two didn't trust each other very much. That said, a dysfunctional relationship that lacks trust is not a motive for murder. So the question remains, who killed John O'Keefe? Was it a tragic, drunken accident, or did something nefarious happen in the Albert home? Where did it go wrong? Let's start with the investigation, or lack thereof. My overarching takeaway from this case is that this was a monochromatic display of how bias changes people and affects their jobs. Michael Proctor, Brian Tully, Michael Morrissey, the Canton Police Department, the Massachusetts State Police were all affected by their own confirmation bias. They refused to look at one of their own and tripped over themselves to pin it on the girl, to the point that they became a laughingstock through their two trials. They engaged in the very witness intimidation they accused others of. I'm looking at you, Yuri Bukenik. They harassed local residents on their doorsteps for believing in Karen Reed's innocence. They brought felony charges against bloggers and citizens exercising their First Amendment rights. They lied. They bullied their own brothers and sisters in blue to get behind the blue wall. Officer Dever is a case in point. The district attorney even made a public statement before the first trial, all but declaring Karen Reed's guilt. The judge and the prosecutor, according to Alan Jackson from the defense team, even put their thumbs on the scale as they chose what evidence the jury could see. And they did all of this to protect fellow cops and a powerful local family from being investigated. They used the might of the Commonwealth against Karen Reed, who has been found factually innocent of this crime, and they didn't think twice about it. They didn't speak to witnesses in a timely manner. They didn't collect surveillance video from neighbors who were also cops. They collected blood on the scene in red Solo cups and Stop and Shop bags. They took a leaf blower to the crime scene. They never investigated anyone in the house at 34 Fairview. They never even searched the house. The cop who lived in that home, who was a first responder, never responded to a man dying on his lawn. They hid video that would hurt their case. They changed times on reports. They inverted video to make the first jury in this trial think Karen Reed's Lexus was facing a different way so they wouldn't think that Proctor was hanging out near the broken taillight. They intimidated and shut down a fellow rookie cop who told the FBI that Higgins and Berkowitz were in the Sallyport with the biggest piece of evidence in this case for a wildly long time. They lied about 34 Fairview being plowed that night. They held on to evidence for weeks and months before turning it over to the crime lab. They manufactured evidence. They deleted video that would have shown Karen driving to John's house. They didn't separate witnesses to question them. They accepted screen grabs of text conversations that had been doctored to verify witness statements. They didn't go into the garage at 34 Fairview. They didn't look into tips. They didn't do DNA testing in a timely manner. And they obfuscated and got belligerent when questioned about their actions. And ultimately, they claim to be let down by the system they've all been gaming for years.
The criminal justice system has let us down at every turn. And yesterday was the final letdown. And that's why we're here, because there's nobody left to stand up for us.
This should terrify you. It does me. The Commonwealth spent millions of tax dollars to try to convict Karen Reed, even though many lawyers and experts say Michael Morrissey should never have brought the case to begin with. The actions of the Canton Police Department and Massachusetts State Police were so egregious, the FBI had to step in to investigate the investigators. And during all of this, another case was happening in Canton, and the overlap between these two cases is astounding. Sandra Birchmore, who had been groomed by former Stoughton police officer Matthew Farwell, his brother, and others in the Police Explorers program from the age of 13, was allegedly murdered by Farwell after Birchmore told him she was pregnant. Farwell then allegedly covered up the murder and tried to make it look like a suicide. The Canton and Massachusetts State Police boosted the cover-up with MSP Trooper Nicholas Guarino. You'll remember Guarino handling some of the tech evidence in both of Karen Reed's trials, said he found zero messages between Farwell and Birchmore, when in fact there were over 30,000 messages between the two. Michael Morrissey's office stated they found, quote-unquote, no foul play in the Birchmore case and that Sandra's death was ruled a suicide. It took Sandra's family suing Farwell and the FBI getting involved to determine that Sandra's death was in fact a homicide. Sandra's murder also happened in 2022. So I ask you, why does it take the FBI to open a case for the truth to come out about the Commonwealth's shady practices? And how many other cases are tainted just like these two? If not for Karen Reed's privilege and determination to fight this, if not for Sandra Birchmore's family believing that Sandra wasn't suicidal and taking their case to court, would we even know about this corruption? How many other cases in the Commonwealth have been tainted and twisted like these two? Sandra and Karen are both white women. Karen had more privilege than Sandra, who was a struggling 20-something, but imagine if they'd been black or brown. Imagine if they didn't have a community and family willing and able to stand up to the district attorney. Now imagine how many other cases are out there that Michael Proctor, Yuri Bukenik, Brian Albert, Brian Higgins, Nick Guarino, Kelly Dever, Brian Tully, Michael Morrissey, Matthew Farwell, and Kevin Albert have all touched in their time in law enforcement. Are we seeing a theme here? Every single one of the players I just listed out are privileged white men, save Kelly Dever. And the only cop who did the right thing in the Karen Reed trial was Officer Barrows from the Dighton Police Department. What does this tell you about the justice system in this one Commonwealth? Karen had privilege, but I'll be honest with you, I'm glad she did. Because of her whiteness and her privilege, we know about this corruption. Now we have to use that information to help the folks who aren't privileged, if you're into that sort of thing. I'll be right back after a quick break.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus, on edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing. without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
After the verdict came down last week, the media frenzy kicked into overdrive. The defense team, save Karen, made the rounds. The jurors started talking to the media. Hank Brennan made a statement. Michael Proctor spoke out. And even the McCabes and the Alberts got together to do an interview. Glaringly absent was Brian Higgins, who hasn't said a word or shown his face since the unfortunate Kevin from Southie incident.
Hey, man, what's up, guys? Kevin from South Boston.
What's up, Kevin from Southie? What's happening?
Listen, I appreciate the things that you two do, you and James, right? But let me ask you something. Those two dudes that you're accusing, right? They're decorated dudes. What happens? Like, can you look at this from both sides? And this comes out that she actually did it? Are you ready to, like, you know, put it out there that you were wrong?
You sound like Higgins, bro.
You wrong.
Is this Higgins?
You wrong.
You're Higgins.
Even a friend of John O'Keefe's, John Jackson, went on Court TV and attacked Vinny Politan, accusing the host of media bias within seconds of saying hello.
Vinny, we saw you out there. We saw you with your pink tie. We saw you just bathing in the pink.
Oh, slow down.
Yeah.
Didn't wear a pink tie, John.
We saw
John.
You hold it up. You held it up, right?
No, I didn't. I held up a red tie, John. If you've watched my career,
so
every verdict I wear a red tie. So
your
I switch
career
from
is
the
interesting.
Purple. From the purple.
The career is interesting.
Okay, this is the way it's going to go.
The career is fantastic. The career is fantastic. Look, up until this case, we all watched you. We all did. We all watched, you know, any case that had any kind of interest to us, we watched. But I just watched that interview with that juror. Well, I was here to talk about something completely different. And it's unfortunate because...
Okay, let's talk about whatever you want to talk about, John. I'll give you an opportunity. It's not a problem.
I can't believe what I just heard from that. I just watched the show, so I can't believe what I just heard that juror say. So many things. I mean, I just went over it. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. It believes the dog bite theory, but they didn't really present it at trial. Those are her words. Barros, she talked about Officer Barros. She apparently missed the cross examination, although she did. Hat tip to Mr. Hank Brennan for his cross-examinations. But, hey, look, I'd love to talk about Johnny.
There are two very splintered sides to this case, and those two sides still see it very differently. Let me break down a bit of the media that's out there right now so you can get an idea of how it seems that this fight is far from over. I'll link to some of these interviews in the show notes so you can watch for yourself. Let's start with Alan Jackson joining Howie Carr's show. Howie kept it tight, and so did Alan Jackson. That man knows how to pack a punch in as few words as possible. My key takeaways from this interview were that Jackson felt Judge Bev and the Commonwealth put their thumbs on the scale. Neither trial was fair, and it was evident that the Commonwealth strategy was to not let the jury see any evidence, witnesses, or experts that would shine a light on the truth of the investigation. Next, David Unetti and Bob Alessi first went on Ian Runkle's channel and then sat down with Peter Tragos, the lawyer you know. These conversations were in-depth and focused more on the love and respect the defense team has for one another, though they did dig into some hot topics, like the moment Hank Brennan pulled John's hoodie out from behind the witness stand and questioned Dr. Wolf from ARCA about whether the cutting holes made by the crime lab could have been caused by road rash. Bob Alessi says he was stunned and disappointed in this moment. Here's Bob talking through this moment.
I gave the argument for a mistrial with prejudice on that. I will not... repeat, I think probably most of your audience saw it. I will tell you that I was stunned that it occurred. I was disappointed that it occurred. My heart broke for justice at that moment, but it was a millisecond, and then I went into overdrive with regard to combating it. It should never have happened. It wasn't just one attorney. There were three attorneys for the prosecution there.
And they all sat quietly.
And you know, once we realized what happened, and it wasn't just what happened, it was how it happened, where that piece of evidence was at the start of the examination. It wasn't shown to us, as has been the custom, you know, brought over to us. We had a very, very key witness on the stand, Dr. Wolf, on the key issue of whether there was a collision or not. And spoiler alert, there never was a collision. And, you know, it was a key moment. It was toward the end of the trial. I was very, very disappointed, to say the least, in what happened. And the fact that after I made the motion for the mistrial with prejudice, the response was, I think I may have made an inadvertent mistake. That was the second disappointment that I had in that circumstance. And then we argued for a curative instruction to have the jury understand, because, Ian, this is a twofer what happened. Not only the incorrect representation, but it was attacking the credibility of our expert, one of our key experts, Dr. Wolf, is like, why didn't you talk about the holes in the back of the sweatshirt? Why, you know, didn't you do a good job, you know, in your analysis? So it wasn't just the fact that it was an evidence issue. It was attacking the credibility and competence of our expert. And my third disappointment was the curative instruction, notwithstanding of all of our efforts. So that was just another example of the many challenges that we had in this trial.
Yannetti and Alessi had a lot more to say about the trial, the witnesses, and all the evidence and testimony Bev Cannone didn't allow in for the jury to see, mainly her decision to not allow the jury to know that ARCA was hired by the feds. Luckily for Karen, the jury saw between the lines and realized the feds had been brought in to investigate the investigators. Alessi added that he was disappointed that they weren't able to question witnesses on their alternate theory of the case, which seems to have centered around the garage. Bev was firm in her decision not to allow the defense to show their photos of the interior of the garage. But if you're on the interwebs, you can see these photos for yourself. Aiden Carney, aka Turtle Boy, has posted them. Shockingly, or not, the photos show a concrete edge in the garage that for some inexplicable reason has been spattered with burgundy-colored paint. Make of that what you will. Now let's get into the softball interview Matt Gutman from ABC News did with the Alberts, McCabes, and disgraced former Massachusetts State Police trooper Michael Proctor. I won't hazard a guess as to how you might feel about these individuals, but from my perspective, they did themselves no favors in telling their side of the story, and in my humble opinion, they look guilty as all get out. Gutman asked soft questions and offered no hard-hitting follow-ups. I wish I'd been able to interview them. I had so many questions. I don't want to give this portion of the media too much air because to me it feels like a cleanup mission on the part of the Alberts and McCabes, but here are a few sound bites so you get the gist of the pity party.
Think real long and hard before you're a witness in a case because no one protects you.
What they've done is they've dehumanized us to the sense where we're not real people. We're almost like caricatures. We're pawns.
We took what we thought was the high road.
What am I supposed to do? Run out front my underwear and start running yellow tape around the fire hydrant?
What you're not seeing in this audio is that whenever anyone, but mainly Chris Albert and Jen McCabe, answer a question from the interviewer, they check in with Brian Albert, stealing a glance his way as if to ask, am I okay to answer it this way? When Gutman asks if John ever went into the house, they go down the line with answers like, no, never, absolutely not. But before each of them answers, they look at Brian. To me, this is shady AF. And the idea that the justice system failed them? Preposterous. The justice system failed the O'Keefes, and it almost failed Karen Reed. You can't destroy your phones, coordinate witnesses, create a timeline, get rid of the family dog, and sell the house after refusing to come out the front door of your house to help a man dying in the snow, and then claim that you're the victim. And speaking of folks who think they're victims in this story, Gutman also interviewed Michael Proctor. Yeah, this guy.
A person by the name of Doc writes, is that chick a smoke? Correct?
Correct.
Who's the chick?
Miss Reed.
And you write, E-H, right?
Yes.
And then you write nutbag, as Chief would say, correct?
Correct.
Who's Chief?
A friend of mine.
And then you write what?
She's got a leaky balloon knot.
Trooper Proctor, explain to the jurors what a balloon knot is.
Your rectum area.
Your anus?
Yes.
That's what you were referring to about Miss Reed?
Yes.
And you were making fun of her because you believed at that time that it leaked? That's how you were treating Miss Reed? Yes or no?
Yes.
You followed that up with the phrase, leaks poo, didn't you?
I did.
Again, another reference to Miss Reed's medical issues and medical conditions, correct?
Correct.
Specifically focused on her anus, correct?
In reference, yes.
In Proctor's 2020 interview, he didn't say anything I didn't expect. I guess most shocking was he claimed the investigation was fine after Gutman asked if he'd do anything differently. Proctor said this.
Is there any part of the actual investigation that you would do over?
Because it's blowing up into this crazy, crazy so-called conspiracy, maybe I could have avoided it by, you know, looking at other people's cars just to say we did it. There's some witnesses maybe we could have interviewed a little sooner. But overall, myself and every detective in that office worked this case like we always do. And so I wouldn't change anything.
And then he got emotional when he recalled the story of his union rep coming to take back his uniforms, wiping tears from his eyes.
I just remember dropping to my knees and laying on my lawn, like crying. I couldn't even talk. I was complete hysterics. And I just remember my mother being like, what? And I kind of gathered myself and I'm like, they relieved me of duty. What really got me was my union rep. He had to come over to my house and pick up all my uniforms. And the one time I broke down was putting my Class A uniform. You know, you go through a 6-month academy and you're very proud to put that uniform on.
I have a hard time feeling any sympathy for this man. He was a cop. He should have understood the consequences of putting his thumb on the scale of an investigation while dehumanizing a woman he had convinced himself was guilty before ever doing a real investigation. The ego involved in believing you're above the law is on full display here with Proctor, the McCabes, the Alberts, and the district attorney's office. It should cause all of us who aren't in law enforcement to question what could happen if we were ever in a place where we were accused of a crime we didn't commit. It feels like due process, a tenet of our Constitution, is slipping through our fingers every day lately, and it's terrifying to me. And speaking of being above the law, I saved Hank Brennan's statement for last because it boggles the mind. Here's Hank's statement.
I am disappointed in the verdict and the fact that we could not achieve justice for John O'Keefe and his family. District Attorney Michael Morrissey appointed me, giving me full discretion to independently assess the case and follow the evidence no matter where it led. After an independent and thorough review of all the evidence, I concluded that the evidence led to one person, and only one person. Neither the closed federal investigation nor my independent review led me to identify any other possible suspect or person responsible for the death of John O'Keefe. The campaign of intimidation and abuse that has been waged, funded, and promoted in public and on social media is the antithesis of justice. If this type of conduct becomes commonplace, it will threaten the integrity of our judicial system, affecting both victims and criminally accused. We cannot condone witness abuse, causing participants to worry for their own safety or that of their families. It is my hope that with the verdict, the witnesses and their families will be left alone. The harassment of these innocent victims and family members is deplorable and should never happen again in a case in this Commonwealth. My heartfelt condolences to the O'Keefe family and faith that over the coming years they will find peace and closure.
Luckily, Alan Jackson chose to release a rebuttal to this statement, and his words shine a spotlight on Norfolk County's continued corruption in this case. Here's Alan Jackson's statement.
The jury has spoken, but Special Prosecutor Hank Brennan, in an egregious breach of prosecutorial ethics, has tried to publicly shame and discredit that very jury. For him to attempt to supplant his personal views for that of the jury is a desperate attempt to save face in the wake of a unanimous rejection of the prosecution's case. The rules of professional conduct are clear. A prosecutor should support the legitimacy of the justice system and promote public confidence in its operations. Openly attacking a jury's verdict because he disagrees with it undermines that centuries-old edict. Mr. Brennan claims that his investigation was thorough. If that were true, the Commonwealth would have uncovered what we, the defense, uncovered. hidden exculpatory evidence, lies and perjury by the Commonwealth's own witnesses, cops covering for other cops, a biased and corrupt lead investigator with personal ties to witnesses, and inculpatory and suspicious conduct by myriad witnesses. The only job of an ethical prosecutor is to seek the truth in a just and fair manner. The Commonwealth fell wildly short of that responsibility. Theirs was not an effort to find justice for John O'Keefe. Rather, it was a personal vendetta against Karen Reed by D.A. Michael Morrissey and his hand-picked prosecutors, and it cost the people of Norfolk County millions. The fact is, Karen Reed is factually innocent, and this case never should have gone to trial in the first place. This case is a stark reminder that there has been a complete breakdown in what is supposed to be our justice system. Those in power are more interested in protecting themselves than the citizens that they are sworn to protect. The Commonwealth's defamatory public comments ring hollow to the very constituents they are supposed to serve. It is now crystal clear that disgraced D.A. Michael Morrissey has no interest in actually seeking justice for John O'Keefe by identifying and prosecuting the real killer or killers. The Commonwealth would rather simply condemn the jury and its fair and lawful verdict. We are thankful for the jury's commitment to truth and that they found their way to a just verdict. But make no mistake, if D.A. Michael Morrissey had his way, the truth never would have come out in this case. It would have been lost somewhere in private and deleted conversations that would never have seen the light of day. Corruption like this doesn't happen in isolation. How many innocent people have been railroaded because of failures in our judicial system? We as citizens must demand more of our institutions.
I'm going to leave the media coverage here because this sums up everything we've heard over the past week from the two sides. At the end of the day, our jury system worked. An innocent woman was found not guilty. I just wish it hadn't cost the taxpayers millions of dollars and that Karen Reed's life hadn't been turned upside down because Michael Proctor wanted a quick win in the death of a Boston police officer. I wanted the Commonwealth, the McCabes, the Alberts, and Proctor to self-reflect a bit and start thinking and talking about change. But when you've done life this way for decades, I guess that's a hard pill to swallow. Growth is not an option right now for these folks, and I find that sad. My coverage of the trial isn't totally over yet. You can still catch me on the readathon with Rebecca Lavoie discussing the media and the case. I would tune in this Friday, June 27th, 2025, in particular. We're going to have a very special guest on the show who is embedded with the defense team, and you really don't want to miss this one. Rebecca and I will continue our coverage of this case and the Sandra Birchmore case, which is coming up later this year, and we've even discussed the possibility of a whole new show together, which I'm stoked about. If you want to catch us live, we'll be at the True Crime Podcast Festival in Boston, July 18th through the 22nd, where we'll talk live about the Karen Reed trial with the audience. Use code CWO for 20% off tickets to the event, and I hope to see you there. I also want to take a moment to thank my new Patreon supporters, Clem, Hillary, Kristen, Emma, Cooper, and Megan. You have no idea what your support means to me, but I can tell you from the bottom of my heart, thank you. You're keeping me going. Please tell your family and friends, and as always, be good people. Don't do murder.
The In Between podcast is written, edited, and hosted by me, Mel Barrett, and is a production of Ruby Grace Productions. If you want ad-free exclusive content, bonuses, and lives, head on over to the In Between podcast Patreon and sign up. The researcher level starts at $6, and there's already 20-plus ad-free episodes for you to binge right now. Special thanks to Amber Hunt for editorial guidance, as well as the rest of the team at Grab Bag Collab, Amanda Rossman, and Daisy Egan for their support and guidance. Another special thanks to Rebecca Lavoie for her friendship and mentorship. Follow the In Between podcast on Blue Sky, Facebook, and YouTube at In Between Pod, and on Instagram at the In Between Pod Official. On TikTok, you can follow me at Jack of All Trades DC. Thanks for listening.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.